with Kizik Hands-Free Shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy-on, easy-off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
First of all, let me get the dad joke of the week over with, or, okay, you know, blog de papa de la semaine, as our French listeners say. Dad joke of the week. Why did the mosquito go to the dentist?
Because he had an itch.
To improve his bite.
That's not very good.
Yeah, they can't all be good.
Yeah.
Some dads aren't very good, quite frankly.
This is the Greg Cody Show with Greg Cody.
Pardon it.
Here's your host, Greg Cody.
Yeah, hey, we're doing it. Everybody, welcome. It's the Greg Cody Show with Greg Cody and Chris Cody. And today,
doing it.
A special. I almost said suspicious. I meant to say auspicious. I want all that edited out.
Nope.
Every time I do something embarrassing on the podcast and I say edit that out, He never edits it out.
Right.
It always gets in.
Dad, it's charming. You know how charming
it's
that
not
was?
Well, charming.
It was charming.
No. It makes it sound like I'm drunk at 4 p.m., which occasionally I will be, but I'm not today. Everybody knows Jessica Smetana, who listened to the Levitard Show because she's fabulous. Absolutely fabulous. Jessica,
thanks,
do you think of yourself as fabulous?
Yeah.
No, I've never used that word to describe myself, actually. But I'll take it.
Why?
Fabulous, just... I don't feel like I'm a fabulous person. I feel like a very...
I think fabulous suits somebody who is into musicals like you are.
Oh, I think musicals are fabulous.
What are we doing today with this? Because, Dad, you texted me something about show tunes. Is that just what old people call musicals? Or, like, I didn't know if you were talking about, like, the theme songs for TV shows. No, this is musicals. Is, like, show tunes, is that, are musicals and show tunes?
I don't know whether those are synonyms or not. Are they?
I don't know either. I think of a show tune as, like, a song that you sing on stage.
Okay.
So that, yeah, which is a musical.
Show theme song. Maybe I was thinking themes, because like
show tunes are in musicals, but they don't have to be. I think they can be kind of standalone things.
Well, I know musicals are important to you, and I recall last year when we all had a part in the Levitard Show musical. What was it called? The Big Game, which is about to be nominated, I understand, for
the Big Game musical.
Yeah, it's about to be nominated for like major awards from everything I hear. Mm-hmm. And JT Daly, the producer of that, raved about Jessica's participation. And I remember we had him on our podcast, Jess, and he described your voice, and I'm sure he meant this in a positive way. He described your voice as theatrical and almost having a Disney-like quality, which I think was wonderful praise by him.
He said that about me?
Yeah.
Yeah. And in fact, let's
I didn't know that.
Let's pull that back from that episode and play it at point, because he did.
The X Factor was already done with this. I just had to write songs that served that. You know, I knew that Jessica was gonna land hard on the pitch and sound like a Disney character.
Who did you have to use auto-tune the least on?
Probably, it kind of sucks because everyone's saying that Jessica is tuned a lot. I actually didn't have to tune her that much at all.
Jess, I wanna ask you, why and how did music become important in your life?
That's a great question, Greg. My parents have always been musical goers since I was a little kid. We, you know, my sister and I grew up outside of Chicago, so we were not too far from a pretty decent sized musical theater scene. A lot of big shows, when they're done on Broadway, come to Chicago, you know, on their whatever tour. And then there's also some shows that have been there for a while. So my parents, you know, maybe once a year would take us to a musical. So I have seen a fair amount of musicals. And then, of course, when I was younger, all of the Disney musicals were very popular. The Little Mermaid, The Lion King, cartoon musicals like that. So I feel like musicals have always been a part of my life, Greg.
So if going to a movie, the ideal snack is popcorn and a drink, what is the ideal musical snack? Like, what do you get every musical that you attend in person? Or are you not eating? Are we drinking? Is it cocktails more so you're not eating?
Yeah, I was going to say the last few years, usually I'll have an intermission vodka soda and a bag of M&Ms or something like that. A little something sweet to wash down the vodka. Mm-hmm. But, you know, musicals are tough because unlike a movie theater, like you really can't be rustling a bag while, you know, your soprano has a solo on stage. Like, you can't be distracting. It's a very, you know.
Am I showing my ignorance here? Like, are people not snacking during musicals? Why did I have it as like a similar, like?
You, I mean, you can, like, they have concessions.
More
but
drinks.
It's not,
right. What am I doing?
It's more, I don't know. I think, I feel like, it depends on the theater, yeah. Chris.
Right.
But, okay. Like, if some of the the bigger, nicer theaters, like, you don't want to really, like, be bothering the other patrons.
I'll do it. I paid for this ticket. I'm eating these damn M&Ms.
What do we think of intermissions? Because I'm anti-intermission. I would rather
really Mr. through. Miller Lite. Mr. I gotta pee because I've drank six Miller Lights.
I'm just saying I would rather sit through one long continuous play or concert than to have an intermission and fight a crowd.
I mean, I feel like in some shows they're necessary. Like, a lot of Broadway shows are the standard, you know, 7 or 8 p.m. start, and then there's a 15 or 20 minute intermission, and then it's usually done by 10:30. And so some of them you're just there for so long that you need that break to go to the bathroom or to get a water or whatever. Otherwise, like, you're just kind of in it for a while. It's like seeing The Dark Knight Rises twice.
I want to get your top five musicals of all time, but first I want to dissect the particular thing about musicals that interests me, which is I'm not sure if Hamilton was the last one I actually saw on stage, but when you go to a musical, it's very obvious that everybody has to like super project their voice. They have to super project all their hand movements. It's almost like a stage actor almost has to overact in a way. Is that harsh or is that accurate?
I think that's accurate. I don't know. Have you ever seen like musical makeup up close?
No.
Okay, so there's some tricks that, you know, people that do makeup for musicals do where they'll over-exaggerate things so people far away can see them under the bright lights. And so, like, up close and in person, the makeup might look one way. It might look kind of crazy, but then on stage, it looks incredible. And it's because, like, you're operating in this very limited space. And you need to be able to convey an emotion or a scene or something to the entire room. So
right.
They do exaggerate a lot of things, makeup, costume, hand motions, whatever it is, dancing. I think one of my favorite things about musicals, Greg, is the choreography.
Yes, for sure. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And also, another thing that interests me about musicals is it's something that's inherently segmented between acts and scenes and everything, but yet everything has to seem seamless, you know, like you're going from different periods in time, and the stagecraft is amazing to me, right? Because it has to. Christopher's giving me a look like I have three heads. What?
No, I feel like you're faking it right now, Dad. With this,
I feel like he genuinely likes musicals, Chris.
Look,
Greg, I have you ever seen videos like the star in a musical or a play having to do a quick costume change and how fast they're able to do it and come back out?
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's incredible.
Right, and here's another thing I wonder: would a stage actor be able to transition into being a film actor? I truly wonder that, because to me they're two different skill sets.
There's a lot of people that have come from Broadway though, right? In film, like there's a lot of.
Yeah, I think it's actually like pretty common in the UK. Like a lot of British actors and actresses start their careers in theater and then work their way up into films. I think of like Christine Baranski, who's a very theatrical, you know, musical actress who's been in a ton of Hollywood films, and including Mamma Mia, which was a movie musical.
Right.
She was in that with Meryl Streep and Amanda Seyfried. But yeah, Greg, I think it does translate well. I think like maybe it's not as common in the U.S. because we don't have quite as much. I don't know. Like England is just, it's a smaller country, and you know they have more theaters and fewer actors and actresses. And in the U.S., the film industry is big and spread out, but I do think it's pretty common to be, you know, if you're a big time star in the UK, you've probably been in like some Shakespeare or other.
You mentioned Mamma Mia, and I have to tell a quick story about how much I love ABBA. Erlene and I were on a disco cruise.
Yes.
For the first time ever.
Wow.
Two other couples. We were on a disco cruise like in early to March 2020, just before the pandemic hit. Like the pandemic was about to crush the entire earth, and we were on a disco cruise.
Swingers cruise.
And one of the bands was an ABBA tribute band, but they were really, really good. And it turned out they were having us on some deck nine or something. They were having like a sound check slash rehearsal early in the morning. And I was out and about probably looking for a 9 a.m. beer, knowing me. And I just stumbled across their sound check. So I sit down and listen to them. It was one of the best performances I've ever seen in my life.
Wow.
There were so many lame acts on that thing because, you know, you're getting Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes without Harold Melvin. You know, you're getting like
Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes.
And these were, none of these people were actually ABBA.
They were Cabba.
Tribute to ABBA was just fantastic. I was mesmerized by that performance. And as I'm in the middle of the story, I realize it doesn't really have a good ending. Really a punchline.
Here's something for you, Greg. I feel like part of the popularity of Mamma Mia was that those songs are so singable and they're so easy. They're poppy, but they're catchy, but the lyrics are easy. And when Mamma Mia was kind of a phenomenon sweeping the country, I remember they had Mamma Mia screenings where they'd put the lyrics at the bottom of the screen and people would go to the theater and sing the songs together. Because I think for some reason, ABBA is just, it's easy to replicate and it's fun to sing along to. You don't have to be the best vocalist to perform it.
Mamma Mia, Mamma Mia. That's what you guys are talking about, right?
Yes.
That song?
Exactly.
I heard, Fernando came on my Sirius XM radio the other day and I cranked it up. It's like ABBA is like a guilty pleasure of mine. I truly love that group. And I don't.
They're phenomenal. They're fabulous.
They are fabulous.
Dad, I actually want to jump around with Jess before we get to her top five. I want to bring her in on the dilemma that we are currently having with mom's surprise 65th birthday, which will have already happened by the time this airs. It is tomorrow. Okay. We are recording this Thursday. It is tomorrow night. First, I just want to ask Jess if she's had any experience with having to plan parties where you have pressures of who to invite, who not to invite, where you're like people are getting offended that when they find out they weren't invited, because we are dealing with that in the Cody household right now, mainly because my dad was at the made the guest list originally and did a terrible job of realizing who he should invite.
Oh no, Greg.
Key people left off that had to be invited last minute. So I've been basically cleaning up after my dad the last week. But what's your experience with this stuff?
I don't think that I've ever thrown a party for anyone or for myself. I can't think of any.
Maybe dinner parties or something where people find out later, oh, you had a dinner party? Oh, you had them over?
I mean, there's been like not dinner parties, but there's been like small things. It's like, oh, we're going out to dinner, but like, don't post anything. I didn't tell so-and-so I was in town. Like that sort of thing.
Yes. That game's dangerous. Yes.
Yeah. But never like a big party or a wedding or anything like that.
Well, for me, the issue isn't just who to invite and who not to invite. It's the whole surprise element. Like the idea of me keeping a surprise from your mother, Christopher, is almost patently. It's the reason, you know, beyond the natural fact that I'm an honest person. one of the many reasons that I've never cheated on my wife is that I would have zero chance of getting away with it. I'm a terrible liar. She's a phone snoop.
A foop.
Oh, a phone snoop.
How do you know she's a phone snoop?
Oh, please. Whenever you get that
I always wonder if my wife's a phone snoop, but I never see her do it. Not like wonder, but like...
Do you do anything interesting enough that like she would want to snoop?
No.
Yeah, that's how I feel. Like I'm an open book. Like I tell Lee everything. So if he ever was like looking at my phone, it would be so boring.
I would just assume she's looking for pictures for Gracelyn. Like if I saw her with my phone, I wouldn't even like.
Well, here's the thing with your mother, Christopher. When my phone goes off and gives me that little sound that means somebody's just left me a text, she has no problem with picking up my phone and informing me who has just been trying to reach
she
me.
Answers your phone. Many a times I call you and mom answers and she's like, he's right here.
Okay. Now, 99 times out of 100, that's perfectly fine. But in the last 2 weeks, I'm having text exchange.
Are you deleting stuff?
No.
Oh no, mom knows.
Oh my God, she definitely knows.
Yeah, she knows.
She knows.
I don't. I never delete stuff. What are you talking about?
Damn, I didn't think of that. I did not know mom was regularly going through your phone, Dad.
I have no reason to think she knows. I mean, yeah, I don't delete stuff. What am I?
I'm not saying no. Not, I'm saying you should. I don't like.
She's a lawyer. It's open for discovery.
You got that right.
You should be deleting stuff in this scenario where you're we're trying to keep this from
Greg. I know. Greg, who did you not invite that you needed to invite?
Her like
it's true.
Like one of her, literally, if my mom was getting remarried, like one of her bridesmaids.
Oh God.
Okay. I hope she's not listening to this podcast. I wish you hadn't said her name, Christopher.
Oh yeah. I forgot we were recording.
Okay.
Bleep it out. Just bleep it out.
Yeah, please. No, there were certain people. Like, I invited half of a couple, but not her husband.
Yeah.
Which caused a big problem.
That's like another thing. And then it's a group that they always go to.
She didn't get a plus
and
one.
It's, like, my mom is tight with all these women, and all the other women's husbands got invited except one.
Yeah, my faux pas.
Greg.
I know.
But, like, see, like, if any of these people are listening, see, like, we should almost leave it all in because it didn't come. My dad just not a good party planner. Like
he wasn't he wasn't deciding. Here's the cutoff. Doesn't make it.
He lives in Orlando, so like he thought that was like, oh, since she doesn't live here, I'm just gonna leave her off. When it's like, Dad, she's close enough.
Just invite her anyway.
Be invited.
Maybe right. She'll make the
which
trip.
Which once I came in, she got invited. Like a lot of people got invited. And
is she gonna make the trip? Is she coming?
No.
Oh wow. Well, it was too late.
Yeah. But the other problem in my defense is that
say it was two gods.
Damn. Can we air any of this? I don't think they listen.
Just bleep it. Just bleep it.
Yeah. Just bleep it all out. I thought the cap was 20 or 25 people, and it wasn't. So
why did you think that? Did you think it because of I don't want to say the word frugal.
Frugality has nothing to do with this. With the dime I'm dropping on this thing, please.
I said I was willing to chip in. You just always offer that. You offer that.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, I'm a very token offer by you.
You offer.
What if I'd said, yeah, let's go 50-50?
I'll do it.
Funny. Because I've been past, I know the private room, having been to that restaurant a lot, and it seemed to me to fit 20, 25 people.
Oh, that's a small party.
We're going to end up having like 35. And yes, it is a small party, which is why...
Okay, then I can see why you had to make choices.
Thank you.
Yeah, but my mom is one of these people, and my dad, and like I cannot wait till once the surprise is in, so I can like tell my mom all the things that my dad did to like almost screw it up. Like I can't wait to share with mom how I had to come in and save the day.
I can't. Yeah, and I'm sure you're going to take all the credit. I cannot tell you,
Dad, if mom would have showed up, if mom would have showed up and was like, "Where's mom?" You know, she's going to be like, "We're within 5 minutes." And if you would have said I didn't invite her, mom would have just started being like, nobody can post pictures. Nobody doesn't know. She would start. It would be her.
She'd be stressed out her entire birthday.
She'd be like, where's Brandon? And then you would have been like, oh, I didn't invite him. You didn't invite Brandon. Like, she would have been mad at you within 5 minutes.
Well, that's the stress of being the main guy doing the surprise party. I hate it. I think I've done it once before in my life, like when she turned 40 or something. I mean, it's been a long time and it's a lot of stress trying to keep a secret.
I remember at that 40th birthday party, my dad had a big, it was at our house, a big like laminated sign of how many days she had been alive, like hanging out, which I don't remember what it was, but it was a lot.
It's true. Yeah.
For my dad's 40th, we, I guess his brother, my uncle, put up these lawn signs of embarrassing pictures of my dad when he was little playing the accordion, and everyone in the neighborhood saw them. And it's a very embarrassing photo. Hilarious. My dad looks very strange and nerdy. But yeah, I feel like doing things on your lawn is like a big 40th birthday thing.
Yeah, it is.
An accordion player has a place in my heart. I love the accordion. I really do.
I'm not sure why it was the, like, I mean, my family's Italian, and I know like accordion playing is maybe a little Italian, but yeah. Very, very random instrument to play. But I guess it was like 1960. So
it is. It's very unusual. When I think of the accordion, I think of Italian music and also like Cajun music, like Zydeco music from New Orleans and everything. That's accordion is big in that.
So in random, though.
Bio
I don't know
music.
A single person that's ever played the accordion other than my dad when he was.
I mean, they weigh like 50 pounds. It's like the most I've actually held an accordion.
Is that true? I had no idea.
Yeah, I can't play an accordion, but I have held one. Yeah, they're big, heavy instruments. Wow. I would love to play an accordion. I really would.
The things you learn.
We should get you one.
Yeah, please. Let's do that. Whoever's listening out there who has an extra accordion, send it to the Clevelander in South Beach and I'll pick it up next Tuesday.
That would be a good grid of death punishment. You have to play the accordion for an entire episode.
It would be.
Except Greg would enjoy it too
much. I would enjoy that. Yeah. I think the accordion is very forgiving. I think the accordion is such that you just makes, it's almost like a, what's that little mouth harmonica?
Harmonica?
Kazoo? It's almost like a kazoo, like a large kazoo. Anyway, we're off track here.
Yeah, we are.
Jess, I would love to hear your top five countdown of your favorite all-time musicals.
Ooh.
And a song from each of them, maybe? Like the whole song?
Oh,
like
that'd be great.
From front to beginning?
Oh, wow.
Front to beginning.
That'd be great.
From front to beginning. Okay, well, this is a big deal, Greg. I've been working on this top five for a few weeks. I've been really looking forward to saying this on the Levitard show, but I'm gonna give you the sneak peek of it because I'm really proud of this list.
And great.
I know that our musical fans and our audience will love it twice.
Mans.
So I'm gonna start with number five, Sweeney Todd.
Wow.
Never heard of it.
What?
See, at least I've heard of it. I've at least heard of it, mainly because they sang it earlier on the Levitard. I think there's a musical performance I'm cutting up right now. I believe you.
Yeah.
I was about to say it happened earlier this week on the show, but it didn't. It was in my headphones when I was cutting up.
You were cutting it. Greg, you know Angela Lansbury, don't you?
Oh, yeah. Murder, She Wrote.
Yes, correct. And Jessica Fletcher. I think I was named after Jessica Fletcher.
Wow.
Wow, congrats.
Not sure if that's true or not, but it is something my mom told me when I was like four, so I've stuck with it.
It makes sense.
But Angela Lansbury actually played Mrs. Lovett in the Broadway production of Sweeney Todd way back in the day. This is an old Stephen Sondheim musical. Do you know what it's about, right, Greg? I can describe it to you.
I do not, no.
Oh, my gosh. It's really convoluted and creepy, but essentially there's this guy named Sweeney Todd who's a barber in London, and he's trying to seek revenge on the man who took his wife from him and locked him up for years. And so he has people come to his barbershop, slits their neck while he's giving them a shave, and then the woman who owns the bakery downstairs turns their meat into pies.
What? My God.
That last part I was not expecting. I kind of knew the premise that he was not a nice, he slit people's throats, but the the meat thing. That's...
Well, there is a film with Helena Bonham Carter.
And people eat it?
Yeah, people come to the meat. They make a lot of money. The people come to the store and eat the meat pies that are made out of human remains. There's a film, I think Tim Burton, from not too long ago. Probably, I remember watching this when I was maybe in eighth grade. It was one of my favorite movies. And it stars Johnny Depp as Sweeney Todd and Helena Bonham Carter as Mrs. Lovett. And Sacha Baron Cohen is in it. Alan Rickman is in it. The guy who plays Peter Pettigrew in Harry Potter, I'm blanking on his name. He's such a good character actor.
People that have done musicals and film, as Dad was talking about earlier.
Exactly. Yeah. So, right. Well, Harry Potter is not a musical, but...
Well, no, but like...
Oh, I'm you mean like the is... movie. Yeah. Okay, I guess. Sorry, yes, yeah. You're right. I thought you meant because of Peter Pettigrew, but correct. Timothy Spall, that's his name. I just remembered it. But it is so creepy. I would watch it every single fall around Halloween.
Wow. I am genuinely shocked that a musical that dark.
Does that travel? I'd see that if that came to Fort Lauderdale. I'd see Sweeney Todd.
Would you?
I would.
Okay.
It probably, right. I haven't seen it on any sort of.
Is it on like Broadway? Like, is it on
not
Broadway?
Anymore, but no. It might, maybe it'll come back. I don't know.
I don't even dare ask what would be a song from that musical.
You've piqued my interest.
Try the priest. It's because they turn a priest into a pie. It's really creepy, Greg. Gosh. It's really creepy and dark. The movie is terrifying. That's number five.
Okay. All right. Number four.
Another creepy one from the legend Andrew Lloyd Webber, Phantom of the Opera.
Oh, wow. I think I've seen the movie version of that.
The movie.
I think I have.
The movie came out, I want to say, like 15 years ago, and it starred Gerard Butler and Emily Rossum, I think. And the whole premise of Phantom of the Opera is also very creepy, I think. But we don't really think of it as a creepy musical, right, Greg?
I think it's got a little creepy factor. Isn't the premise akin to The Elephant Man, or am I misreading both?
Well, So the premise is that, like, the Phantom is this man who lives underneath the opera house, and he's like, it's kind of like the Hunchback of Notre Dame. Like, he's got this, like, physical abnormality, and so he stalks the opera house, and he falls in love with this young soprano who's the understudy, and tries to train her to become a better singer. And then he it's very creepy. He ends up falling in love with her, and that's the part where I'm like, when I saw this when I was a little kid, I was like, wow, like, what a love story. And then when I watched it again as like a 25-year-old, I was like, what the hell? Like, this Phantom's like pretty horny for this girl. I don't know about this.
let me real fast jump in here. I'm trying to share this. Does this work? Can you guys see my screen?
I can see your screen, yeah.
All right. Do you hear this?
No.
Wait, why don't I hear this? Wait, I think my thing's coming. Here we go. Ready?
I see you, Joanna. I feel you.
Sounds great
in this world.
Dad, you were there for that.
Fantastic.
They do it again. Hold on.
Now I'm at your window. I was in the dark before you.
None of this is explained
Joanna.
What it's about.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Okay, I just wanted to...
What was that?
That was like the musical performance nominee that Jess and Mike did of Sweeney Todd. That was Sweeney Todd. That's why I grabbed that.
Oh, wow. Okay. So where were we on number three?
Number three, Chicago.
Of course.
Greg, I feel like that's very of your vibe.
Yeah. In fact, I'm going to Chicago next week for a wedding.
No way. Fun.
Yeah.
No. Greg, I love the musical Chicago. I love the jazz. The dancing, it's like kind of like cool and dark, and again, very, very dark, actually, now that I think about it. It's about women who murder people and like live in prison, and then kind of like the main character is able to convince this lawyer through her, I guess, sex appeal to appeal to the goodwill of people to kind of get her out of jail. I don't know. I'm not explaining the ending well, but... Very, very murdery also.
Numbers 5, 4, and 3 really convey a dark side to Jessica that I never really imagined. I mean, think
That's
about it.
That's fair. Well, so the movie Chicago, I think, won Best Picture. It had Renee Zellweger, Catherine Zeta-Jones, Richard Gere, John C. Reilly was in it, singing Mr. Cellophane. It was phenomenal,
I believe,
Greg.
In 03. That was one of my trivia things the other night in trivia.
Oh.
There was like a thing where you had to put four things in order of when they happened, and one of them was Chicago winning the Academy, and we got it all right, and it was like 03, I believe, is where that ended up being. If you
I think you're right. I think you're right. It was the year before Million Dollar Baby, the worst film ever. Anywho, love Chicago.
Right. Wow.
Number two.
Number two, Jesus Christ Superstar.
Wow.
Yes. Now you're speaking my language.
You like Jesus Christ Superstar?
I loved it, and I particularly loved the soundtrack, to be honest with you. And
I never even heard of it.
I have to tell you, I could be off a year or two on the year. I think of it as like 1971, 72, 73, right around there. Is that a sound about right? And
yeah, it's like a rock opera.
Opera.
Yeah, right. And the title song, which I think was just called Superstar, so that radio stations wouldn't be offended and afraid to play
Jesus
it.
Jesus Christ Superstar. Was,
but, yeah. Jesus Christ, who do you think it was? That was a soundtrack. I was in high school when that came out, I think, or maybe just getting out of high school. And that song by Murray Head was the lead singer with the great female chorus. That song was all over the radio. That was a huge part of the soundtrack of my life for like a year at a very important time in my life. So that's the main reason why Jesus Christ Superstar to me resonates as important, more than the stage show itself.
I've never seen the stage show. I've actually never seen the stage show of Sweeney Todd. I've seen Phantom in Chicago, and I've seen my number one on stage, I think, three times, maybe twice. But Jesus Christ Superstar, the film. So they did the one with John Legend a couple years ago, or maybe like 4 years ago. That was a made-for-TV thing over Easter. It's okay. It's good. The singing's very good. But to me, the campy 1970s movie with, I think, Carl Anderson is Judas, I think. It is so of its time. It's weird. It's kind of funny. It's just incredibly strange. But I love the music in it. I watch it every single Easter. It's a little tradition for me
Oh, wow.
to watch by myself. And again, Andrew Lloyd Webber, it is just, Greg, it's phenomenal. I think it was probably pretty controversial when it came out, though, because of certain depictions of different apostles and Judas, yes, and et cetera.
It definitely was controversial, I remember. And also, that was in a time in America, it was just coming out of really the hippie era. You know, all the guys had hair down to their shoulders, and Woodstock, I think, had just happened a couple of years earlier. So it was definitely fit a certain era. But that was a big one to me. I love it. What was your favorite song in that musical? Do you have one?
For me, I think it's probably the opening number that Judas sings called Heaven on Their Minds.
Right.
Oh, Greg, it's so good. I will
sing a couple of notes.
Okay, let me think. Okay. Listen, Jesus, to the warning I give, and remember that I want us to live.
There you go.
I don't remember the rest of the words. I know the song. I just need to hear
awesome.
The beat.
That was lovely. And we're going to insert a drum roll right here. And here's why. Number one.
Les Miserables.
Thank you.
Oh, wow.
The epic.
Okay.
By Claude Michel Schoenberg, based on the book by Victor Hugo. The best musical of all time, Greg.
Well, here's my only problem with that. I have an issue with pronouncing titles that are hard to pronounce. Like, I was never sure growing up how to pronounce that. There used to be a shampoo.
Oh, God.
I don't know if it's still around. I can't be around with this name. There used to be a shampoo called Dippity Doo. And I was literally too embarrassed to go into an Eckerd drugstore and say, Eckerd. I'm looking for the Dippity Doo.
Dippity Doo?
Yeah, it's a shampoo called Dippity Doo. And because of that, like, Les Miserables, like Miserable, you know, I never knew how to pronounce it.
I can still buy some right now at Walmart.
What, Dippity Doo?
Walmart, and it says Dippity Doo Girls with Curls. Curl conditioner.
Conditioner.
It used to be a thing, like it's a pink bottle. Like, I think
sounds
it's
like a bride at Disney World.
It's some sort of shampoo that it helps with curls, it looks like.
Okay. But at any rate, I would never order it. I would never ask for it. You know, back then you didn't order things and have it delivered. You had to actually go into a drugstore and say, where would I find the Dippity Doo?
Eckerd's Drugs, to be
right.
Yeah.
Never exactly. Heard of an Eckerd's.
Just what just missed the list? Like, what would have been number six?
I have an extensive OLI. The last musical that I saw before the pandemic was Tina, which was in the West End. I was in London, like, you know, you were on a cruise, Greg. I was abroad, and then we saw Tina, and then we were like, are we going to get stuck here? We didn't, but Tina was excellent. Hamilton is on the OLI. I think Hamilton's probably, yeah, I mean, great. It's easily in my top 10, just misses the top five.
Controversial
yeah. Now, because I think it was one of those things that is so popular that it immediately became corny, and like, now it's oversat, like we're oversaturated with Hamilton content, probably.
Right. But I meant controversial not making your top five. That's what I meant.
Oh, yeah, that's fair. I think if I made this list, like, to be honest, I think it's a really strong list, Greg. I just don't see a place where Hamilton can slide into this list. I just feel like these five musicals I all saw when I was younger, and they've all been part of my life. In one way or another, I've either had to perform them, or, you know, it helps having a movie version of them because I can keep watching them over and over. Hamilton doesn't have a film. Like, it has the Disney Plus thing, but that's a stage, you know, a filmed stage show. So it's not really the same thing, but Hamilton's barely outside. Book of Mormon was very funny. I saw that when I was very young, so it's been a while.
I feel like all the ones on your OLI are like the ones I've seen.
Yeah.
Like, now we're getting into my sweet spot here.
What does OLI mean?
Oh, God.
Outside looking in, Greg.
Okay.
Somebody doesn't listen to Levitard show. Jeez.
Mama Mia, again, the ABBA. Very underrated musical was the SpongeBob musical that was on Broadway in 2018. Didn't have a very long run on Broadway, but I'm a huge SpongeBob fan, so I loved it. And I thought the performances were excellent. Grease, also in my OLI.
Jess, before we let you go, I want to ask you about your own history of live performances, when you have performed in front of a crowd. But before I do that, I want Christopher to recall the time when he sang in a school choir.
I remember.
And Christopher, I'm going to tell a story, and you tell me if you remember this.
You got to fax the facts to Santa.
Yeah, you
that
were
was like one of my solo. I had a solo once in a song. And I don't remember the. I don't. I would sing it if I remembered it, but I just remember like the hook of it was "I'm gonna fax the facts to Santa."
Right, and you had on a little Kelly Green vest, like yep. Almost like a leprechaun type thing. Is what you guys wore, and the audience were like nursing home people.
Well, we like performed for the school, but we also went around to a few.
So, Jess, what's your version of that story?
Well, I had a very traumatizing musical theater career, Greg. Wow. It lasted for one musical. I was cast as the Grinch in our eighth grade rendition of Horton Hears a Who.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't want to be the Grinch. I wanted to have a role with actual lines, and the Grinch only had one line. And I also felt that it was kind of like, what are you saying about me?
Yeah, what happened? Like, why did they choose you? Do you remember what they said?
They didn't say anything. They just said I was the Grinch. I was like, thanks.
That's- maybe they, maybe wow. You had a big smile and they were looking for a character that could really do, I don't know. I'm just.
I don't think that was it. I felt slightly put off by
wow
my casting as the Grinch. And then I only had one line.
What was it?
Where even a Grinch wouldn't dare to be terribly mean. Something like that. It was like one nice. Stupid line. This was in like, this was like 2008, but I remember
it. Did you say it begrudgingly?
I was just like, sure, yeah. And then I was just like glaring at Mr. and Mrs. Who the entire time and the Cat in the Hat.
That's who you wanted to be?
Wow.
That's who you wanted to be?
I think I wanted to be the Cat in the Hat because the Cat in the Hat's like the narrator and they sing like a very, I don't know. Like it was in my vocal range at the time. And I thought that I would have nailed that. And then the year before that, actually, I was cast as Judas in Jesus Christ Superstar. But it wasn't like a wow. full production. It was like in front of our class. Mm. So that was when I memorized Judas's role in Jesus Christ Superstar. And again, like musical, just it means a lot to me, Greg. It's been with me my whole life.
Is it fair to say that your negative experience as Grinch really deterred and eliminated the possibility of what otherwise would have been just a wonderful career on the stage?
I think that's 100% true, Greg. And, you know, maybe it's what pushed me further into sports. Maybe I would have, you know, quit soccer to pursue musical theater in high school, but instead right. I doubled down on soccer and I don't know where I would be in my career if I spent all those weekends in the theater instead of watching college football and NFL football games, but maybe I wouldn't be here.
Was and this is a final question. Was there ever a time during your soccer career when in the middle of perhaps dribbling the ball downfield toward a beautiful shot on goal, you just broke into song?
All the time, yeah.
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 Okay. And on that note, always a delight.
It was very effective, Greg, in distracting the goalie, I will say.
You know what? That would be very effective. Why don't more athletes do that in general?
Great so you've question. Got them stopping their defensive strategy and just starting to dance along with her? Like, what's
yes.
the...
Yeah.
Because I've got them still trying to steal the ball and just being like, why is she singing?
Greg, I have an idea. In the World Cup corner kick, the defense, instead of marking everyone...
Starts dancing?
Goal line, kick line, like
yes.
the Rockets.
Yes. Right.
Let's do it.
Oh, like...
Yeah, I like that. Like, all of a sudden... Put the flash mob in live sports. I think that's what we need. I think we've hit on something here.
I love
and
it.
And on that beautiful note.
Can the three of us get in unison like this, like just even though we can't see our feet, like Dad, get with like that, that. Me and Jess got it, but Dad's like going in the opposite direction. All right. Thank you, Jess.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, that kind of thing. That kind of thing. That kind of thing. That kind of thing. Let me ask you an off-the-record question off of the podcast. That kind of...
All right, what?
That kind of thing. Quit that. It's annoying. What the hell's going on? That kind of thing. That kind of thing. That's actually funny.
No, go ahead. What were you going to say?
All right. Always love having Jessica on. She's an illuminating person, a good singing voice, a delight. all the way around. I think we've only had her on the podcast once previously, right? Not counting little cameos on a boat or something. I mean, as a proper guest, that kind of thing.
Yeah. That kind of thing.
It's very musical. I do enjoy that. Anyway, so we talked to Jessica about the party before it happened. Now we are recording this after the fact. Boffo reviews for the party. Mm-hmm. I think your mother enjoyed it. Whether or not she was surprised, we'll probably never really truly know.
She wasn't.
You don't think?
No.
Well,
I think we screwed up by not giving her enough attention about her birthday leading up. Like we were,
yeah.
We went, zero dark 30.
Yeah.
Not mentioning her birthday to her, and that like her radar was up.
That was a fatal flaw.
Only my wife, of all her close friends and family, like mentioned her birthday beforehand.
Really? Yeah, I should have. That was a big faux pas by me because I did have a plan other than her birthday, and I should have mentioned it. Or should I have at least said, so what do you want to do with your birthday? You know, and that kind of crap. Yeah. But anyway, it went very well. What did you think of the party? Be honest.
I thought it was fun. I thought it was, you know, a nice combination of, it was kind of segregated, you know, work friends, personal friends. But, you know, I was cool with that.
Yeah, it was family and friends and work friends. I mean, those are the big three, right? I mean, who else are you going to include?
Like swinger friends.
Swinger friends, yeah, that could have been, ex-lovers.
Mahjong friends.
Mahjong friends would have been another element.
When I say Mahjong?
Yeah.
Pickleball
but
friends.
But I survived it. What friends?
Pickleball.
Oh, yeah. I want to play pickleball, by the way. Do you have any interest in playing pickleball with me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I want to do that. Not as an Olympic sport, but just for fun. I want to, first of all, let me get the dad joke of the week over with, blog de papa de la semaine, as our French listeners say. Dad joke of the week. Why did the mosquito go to the dentist?
Because he had an itch.
To improve his bite.
That's not very good.
Yeah, they can't all be good.
Yeah.
Some dads aren't very good, quite frankly. So before we get out of this podcast, I have to circle back to the Charles Bricker stunt that I was a part of unwittingly, really, on the Levitard show. I feel like I don't know what the reaction has been, what the reaction the show has gotten. Probably mostly favorable, but not all favorable, I guarantee you, because I've heard some negative reaction about how the Charles Bricker stunt, the impersonation of Charles Bricker, used an attempted suicide for comedic purposes. You know, and at that time, I thought I was talking to Charles Bricker. I swear I did. And so I reacted sympathetically, like, geez, I'm sorry to hear that, and blah, blah, blah. But still, I think it turned off a lot of people once they found out that the whole thing was a spoof. And I think everybody knows somebody, either directly or indirectly, who has suffered from depression or, mental illness or just suicidal thoughts even. And I don't think it's anything to fool with, really. And I want to mention just as almost as a little pissant public service that anybody listening who has suffered from these dark thoughts, you know, you're not alone, and there are people out there to help you. And it used to be an 800 number for the National Suicide Prevention Hotline, and there still is one, but now just recently, I think beginning in July, there's now a 3-digit dialing code hotline for the National Suicide Prevention, and that is 988. So in all seriousness, we kid a lot on this podcast, but if anybody out there has bouts with depression and has ever had any of the darkest thoughts, 988 is the number to call. You're more of a part of the show than I am. What did you think of the whole Bricker thing?
Yeah, I mean, in it, I thought it was a great bit because you bit it hook, line, and sinker.
Yeah,
and,
I did.
You know, Adam was given a character. You know, there weren't lines written out. That wasn't something we planned. And he went there and, you know, it made us all, I think, a little uncomfortable. It's a learning lesson for the producers, too, because that was not live. Like, that happened a day before we aired it.
Yeah.
So we could have edited that out. So, you know, that's on all of us. And it's definitely a serious thing that shouldn't be joked about. So it's definitely a learning experience for us all. I feel terrible and apologize to anybody that was triggered by that or, right. you know, that's why it stinks with comedy, because sometimes you're just trying to be funny. You know, that's why, like, I don't even necessarily think Adam, he's a guy who gives to a lot of good causes. You know what I mean? It's not like just because he got carried away in a spot, you know, I don't right. even necessarily hold it against him personally, but it's right. just, when you're trying to be funny and you're improvising and you don't have anything planned out, you
right.
sometimes you might cross a line that you don't want to hurt anybody. You're just trying yeah. to be funny.
Right. I think because suicide is such a no-joke situation in all cases, I think that's why I took it seriously. That's why I never assumed for a second that this was a character trying to put me on. That did occur to me later in the conversation when Bricker, quote unquote, started talking about this religious cult that he was in and trying to enlist me to, and there was a van coming to pick me up. And that's when it really began to go off the rails a little bit, but a good, a good bit nonetheless, a daring bit that, and the question still is out there. Where's Charles Bricker? Charles, if you're listening, if it's really you, I want you to call into our hotline. I don't even know if we have a hotline, but you want to call into it. So the mullet championship is going on. And I did some research on a mullet. Christopher, have you ever known me to have a mullet?
No, but I think with, you know, where your hair game is at this point, you could pull off a mullet because I feel like you can still go long in the back.
Yeah.
It's just like, you know, the hairline might not be great.
Right.
Like, I'm right there with you. I'm not like judging. I'm not throwing yeah. stones.
No, I could definitely pull off a mullet. If I let my hair grow long, while at the same time keeping it shaved off my ears on the sides, I would have a mullet in a matter of months. I did some research on a mullet, and everybody knows, but if they don't, the mullet basically means your hair is short on top and on the sides, but long in the back. I think it was popular in the 1980s. If you look at back when MTV actually used to play music videos, if you look at some of those 80s rock videos, a lot of the actors in those rock videos had mullets.
Why are we bringing up mullets?
Because there's the USA Mullet Championships are going on. I'm reading here. There's finalists from 16 states looking for the title of best mullet in the nation by age division, and it's a $2,500 cash prize. How about that? So people are growing a mullet just to win this prize. Probably.
So you like have to travel like. You're spending that much just to travel to this competition.
Yes, right. It's just for the absolute prestige of being the USA.
Are like the guys that are the big favorites, like are they all sponsored by like, you know, hair products and
I sure hope so.
Cowboy boots and
yeah, they gotta be, right? The mullet, I didn't know this. I'm a sort of a Beastie Boys fan, but I didn't know that they had a prominent song in 1994 called Mullet Head, which is considered what really popularized the whole idea of the mullet. But it actually began with an Australian car magazine called Street Machine, which referenced mullet haircuts in 1992. So for anybody who's just been dying to know about the history of the mullet, I think we've just given it to you. Christopher, I would like you to wear a mullet because I don't feel like you have ever had what I would call long hair. Like you've never had shoulder length hair, right?
Nah.
Why is that?
I don't know. I'm just always kind of, you know, dug it not that way.
Right.
Haven't okay. most people, like, what percentage of people have long hair at one point?
Well, you know, if you were a teenager or in your 20s in the 1960s, 70s, and 80s, I guarantee you had long hair.
I'm thinking of, like, you know, my 15 closest friends, and I think, like, two of them have had really, like, Tommy Sefrega.
Right.
Like, I'm trying to think who else has had really long hair.
I don't think it's fashionable now. It used to be, though. Like, when I was in high school, any picture you see of me when I'm, like, 17, 18, 19, I have shoulder-length hair. I have long hair. I'm like, yeah. You know, I was not quite old enough to be a hippie because when the hippie thing was happening, I was, like, in my mid-teens, 14 or whatever. But I definitely went through the long hair stage. And now I'm going through the dyed hair stage, which I'm going to admit to everybody. I find myself apologizing for my hair because it's too dark. It's black.
I don't think people know. I think it's just enough where people that are around you a lot might be like, "Whoa, his hair was a little gray like last week." But if people right. haven't seen you in, you know, 7 months, like I don't think it's like, "Whoa, this guy's," you know, I don't think it's that painfully obvious.
Okay, That's probably true. By the way, I have to admit, I don't consider myself a gullible person. And I say that even as I got fooled by the Charles Bricker stunt. I'm not a gullible person, but I have to say...
Talking to your mic, my friend. Jesus Christ.
I know, I'm being too casual on this episode. I'm like having a conversation, forgetting that I'm actually physically leaning into a mic.
You're
sorry.
Like, what am I doing over here?
I got fooled by that Antonio Brown quote last week, which I totally thought was him talking. I thought that was his direct quote, and it turns out somebody else had said that about him as if it were him, and he apparently liked it and retweeted it. Do I have that right?
Yeah, or I don't know who created it, but somebody not Antonio Brown wrote it, like thinking this is something Antonio would say.
Right.
And Antonio's like, yeah, I would say that. In fact, let's share it. At what point, like, if you share a quote of you on your Instagram, it's like you're releasing a statement.
Yes, exactly.
Like, okay, so you have a ghostwriter for your quotes. That's basically what's going on here.
Yeah, exactly. So maybe I shouldn't apologize for being duped.
You've been duped quite a few times in recent weeks. So, like, this is the least of them. I will at least give you that.
Okay. All right. A quick sports question. I'm curious what you thought about the settlement between the NFL and the Players Union over the Deshaun Watson penalty. Basically, it went from a 6-game suspension and no fine to 11 games and a $5 million fine. Now, I wrote a column about it. Thank God the whole thing is over, but his punishment doesn't end when he can play again, because he's still going to hear that reaction from every visiting stadium he goes. And the fact that he's not admitting yet any guilt, you know, he did give a half-assed apology, but he's not admitting any guilt. So he's really, this is not behind him just because there's an end date. Now, what did you think of the extended penalty?
That's the part that is annoying and frustrating. And just, I hope he experiences, because we don't really have, like, who's the guy in sports that has just been like, this is the most hated guy in sports in terms of, like, consensus, even at some home games. Like, it's 50-50 even at home games.
Right.
I can't think of an example of that in any sport where it's just a guy consensus. Like, this guy almost doesn't deserve to be here.
Oh.
So that's, I hope he becomes that guy. And it's, like, the biggest boost in every arena and every possession. And the fact that he, like, because he's even gone back and forth. He was, like, never, he was deny. And then there was, like, one quote where he was, like, he gave, like, where it was just like, it wasn't even a good apology, but like, he said something. And then he's back to, I never did anything wrong.
I know.
So it's like, he's gone back and forth. It just makes me sick.
When the commissioner of your league, the commissioner of the NFL, has referred to what Deshaun Watson did as egregious and predatory, the NFL's own investigation found him guilty of sexual assault in at least 4 cases of women they interviewed. So he has been found guilty by the league that he plays in, and yet he goes on and he's going to be booed in every stadium, and he's going to hear the ugly chants like he heard in Jacksonville last week, and you know what, he's brought it all on himself. I don't feel much sympathy for him at all. And until he does a proper apology and says, I had a real problem, I'm getting treatment for it, I am so sorry, I'm sorry I lied, until that happens, I don't think he ever gets past this. I think it follows him his entire career.
I can't believe that no players have, like, really stood out and been vocal about, like, you know, maybe because, like, do you think it's like a players union thing where, like, the players unions, like, don't do that? Like, it hurts us. It hurts us as a union if we, I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, I'm surprised there hasn't been a single player that's like, this is bullshit.
Right. Yeah. Like, no, you're right. I mean,
Patrick Mahomes came out and was like, why is he able to play right now?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm surprised that hasn't, like, there's nobody that's done that.
Yeah, including, unless I'm missing it, there haven't been a lot of, and the media now is full of former athletes. Has there been a former NFL player on any major platform?
I mean, media members have been pretty strong. All, like, it was pretty consensus. Everyone was like, he should get at least a year.
Right.
You know, but we would still be here. What would we feel that much better if it was a year? Like, I mean, fact that he is so unapologetic is the I would still be frustrated about that. I'd be like, I don't think he should get to ever play again until he admits that he did something wrong. Yeah. Like, it's bullshit. Like, that's what I mean. Like, this, like, the penalties, 11 games, 16, we can debate that, whatever.
Right.
But it's like that. I would still be angry at his attitude about this whole thing, and the fact that he's kind of getting away with it. He's gonna be the starting quarterback, whether it's 12 games in or next season. He's gonna be the starting quarterback, making millions and millions of dollars, having done all of that.
Yeah, but at the same time, he'll never get his good name back. He'll never get his reputation back. And I think he's gonna discover his first game back from suspension on December 4th in Houston, his former team, against his former team. He's gonna discover right then that his punishment has not ended. The booing and the vitriol and the ugly chants against him are going to continue, and they're going to follow him, and that's what he's brought on himself. On a happier note, quick update on our petition drive at change.org to change.
Can we just end the episode
to change Mount Rushmore to Mount Gregmore, an army. A growing army.
227 people have...
Well, last time I looked, it was 226, but wow, you know what?
I completely just guessed.
Maybe it's 227 by now. And if it isn't, go to change.org and make it so. Be the dream.
That is such a sad, small percentage of the people that listened to the last 2 weeks of episodes. That nobody cares about this. Like, it's not that funny. It's just you wanting to say Mount Gregmore.
It's an important cause, which we've discussed before. But, hey... Appreciate you all, as always, pod family. Thank you. Thanks to Jessica. Really enjoyed her being on the podcast. Good kid she is. And and we'll catch you next week. That kind of thing.
Dad, how do I sound when I talk this far away from the mic?
Pretty bad. Yeah. Is that what I did a couple of times? Did I sound like this? I'm like coming from a tin can back on Mars or what? Okay, here I am. Now I'm leaning in. Now my lips are right
on
the
mic.
That's
too much. See, that's too much. See, like a little...
That kind of thing. that does have a musical quality. That kind of thing. Talking about that kind of thing. That kind of thing.